Welcome to Orchard Conversations, a podcast brought to you by the Orchard community.
Because what I see on social media is when people, the specific thing they seem to pay attention to that seems to especially get to them about a thing that wasn't even the focus of the thing that I posted, but that's the thing that really bothered them about it, and they're outraged and they can't stop talking about it. I'm like, fascinating. Fascinating. I feel like I'm on the other side of a two-way mirror. You think you're looking at me, but you're looking at yourself. And isn't that fascinating what you're unintentionally revealing? And I'm not going to sit here and try to take advantage of that, but like, that's so much more of what I see happening on social media.
Hi, friends. My name is Benjamin J. Thomas. So glad that you are here joining us today as we continue our conversation series called Here to Create, exploring the ways that our creativity, regardless of the actual form our creativity takes, it plays a huge role in shaping us as humans and also shaping the world that we're placed in. This week, we continue our conversation with singer-songwriter Derek Webb. Last week, Derek shared a bit about his journey, coming to understand his own unique voice and really what it means to hone in on what it takes to, you know, discover that peculiarity and that unique, like, weirdness about our own particular stories and voice, and that within that peculiarity, we're able to create with resonance. Because resonance is what happens when someone else experiencing someone else's creation truly feels seen and heard. In many ways, this is the power of art. So without further delay, let's jump right back into our conversation with Anna Hammond and Derek Webb.
There's something so great about listening to a song or reading a book or whatever and feeling seen, feeling understood. Mm-hmm, like mm-hmm. this person is like me. We feel mm-hmm. so much less alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've kind of said in the last 10 or so years of my work that like that's become the most important part. Like if art must have a use, and it doesn't have to have value. But if it does, if it's going to have a use, I think the use of helping people feel less alone in their lives and stories mm-hmm. is for sure a great use. Mm-hmm. And I didn't used to really see that part of it or care about that. Acknowledge or care about that part of it when I was a younger songwriter, but like in the last 10 years or so, that has really showed up as the real motivating part of it to me. The thing that keeps me in the job, the thing that I now really think about is like, what are people whose lives are like mine, who are experiencing some version of what I'm experiencing now? What is the language that they need to help them get through, or what is it? What are the words? What are the songs? What are the battle cries? What are the, you know, what are those things? And that's kind of become part of my ethic for writing, and it never used to be. And what's ironic about that is the 20, you know, or so years, if I said it's been the last 10 or so that I've come to that realization and focused on it, the previous 20, I was thanked a lot by people for my ministry. And I totally understood what they meant. It's a high compliment, and I receive it. And I'm not trying to be the asshole who's like, you know, technically this isn't vocational ministry. I'm a vocational singer and songwriter because I don't show up every day to my job in order to change people's minds or win them to my way of thinking. I show up to write and perform songs with excellence if I can. Mm-hmm. That's my only motivation. I'm not a minister. I never have been. Is there a ministry that happens as a result? Sure, and that's true of anybody, but like, and there are other musicians who do this kind of job as vocational ministers. They are using music as a way by which to say what they believe, how they see the world, and to kind of get that language into other people's heads. That's not why I do it. The point is, when people have said that to me over the years, I hear what they're saying, and I will say thank you. You don't ever correct somebody. It's in bad taste, but here's what's crazy is, here 20 years later, at a point where I don't identify as an evangelical Christian at this point, and I remain, as I always will, hopefully permanently uncertain mm-hmm. about things that are invisible like God or mm-hmm. unknowable like the future, uncertainty is a good way to go. And so in this particular season, I finally am I finally feel like I'm in vocational ministry, like for the first time ever in my whole career in the last 10 years and currently, because I am doing it motivated by the people who I know will resonate. And that's, I'm thinking of them while I'm writing. I never did that for the first 20. And so it's so fascinating, but I have found that I love that feeling. And I love hearing that as a response that I heard this song, I heard this language, and I realized I was not alone. Like that to me was like, oh, well, if it can be done and put to that use, that is how I want to do it always. I loved so much the way that felt that I pivoted a little bit around that. And so, because you make choices, you know, you're all, as an, you know, creative person, you're making choices always. And, but it's interesting, just as you said that, like, you know, that means more to me than anything now. So if somebody says to me, oh, I heard your record, I heard your song, and it made me feel less alone, I had not heard that before, that is the highest compliment, because that's actually, that's specifically why I do it now.
Well, it's shifting the framework or your idea of what success even would be. Cause that's like the deepest compliment of resonance. And like, that's, and it's so true. I think in the way that you've been able to continue to do that is you've got a track record of being able to, of that honesty, that integrity kind of coming through the songs. And there's a resonance, there's stories like myself or like Anna's Ben, right, who like resonate on that level. I think it's a really interesting, and it kind of puts us where, say this record in particular, the Jesus hypothesis, is you kind of walking away in some way going like, yeah, this whole idea, especially evangelical Christianity, which a lot of us and a lot of the folks probably engaged in this conversation have distanced themselves from to some degree. And then you're able to like step back into it and observe it and talk about it and talk about how can we bring healing and bring light into something that you're seeing some elements and feeling, not just like judgy. I think that your records and your music has always come across with, it's almost more like hanging out with somebody going like, man, look at the mess we're in together, rather than like pointing out like, oh, this is wrong, right? And then even more recently, it's gotten, you know, the collab with Flamey Grant and watching that, I was like, oh, wow, that is bold and heartfelt. There was not, everything in it was like, this is so honest and so beautiful. And also to speak up on behalf of a people group who is marginalized. And that is, that's also the Jesus way. And now I'm leaving a lot of gaps out, so some folks listening and watching might not know. Maybe you could give us just a little bit of what led to that collaboration and what that's kind of been like recently, because this is all now.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. And honestly, it's one of the things in my whole career that I'm probably the most proud of is to lead with the punchline. The role that I played in helping a drag queen go to the top of the CCM singles and album charts. First time ever in history. And just in the last month or so. But so Flamey Grant is a drag queen from San Diego and one of my dear friends, a longtime friend. And I just respect Flamey as a musician, as a songwriter, as a performer so much. And so when you have friends like that, you're always looking for opportunities to collaborate.
Their record is so good too, by the way. Like, I turned onto it because of you and I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Like it's, Flamey's debut record is out and it's called Bible Belt Baby and it's everywhere. You can go find it. And so, maybe sometime last year, Flamey reached out when she was working on the full length record and just asked about, here's how it happened. Flamey launched it as a Kickstarter to fund the making of that record. And I backed it because I was because Flamey's a friend and I knew it was going to be amazing. And I just wanted to help in any way that I could. So I obviously was a quick backer on the Kickstarter and then immediately texted and said, hey, if I can help in any way, if I can help spread the word, if I can help with the record. And I was kind of putting it to him. I was like, you know, if you want me to sing a background vocal, so Flamey came back and had grown up on Cademans and, you know, kind of like has a long history with like grown up on CCM music and stuff like that. So was like very keen on and cool with having me on the record and stuff like that. And there's only a few features on the record. One is Jen Knapp, who's a very longtime friend of mine, was a hero of Flamey's. Grace Baldridge, who goes by, whose moniker is similar. Another really great friend, and I are the three features on. Oh no, and then Adeem, the artist, is the fourth. And so I said, you know, please let me help me anyway. So I wound up singing on a track called A Good Day, and it's a beautiful song. It closes the record, And so we had done that, that record had come out. And then when it, when I was working on Jesus Hypothesis, I was about to put it out, and there was a song on my record that's called Boys Will Be Girls, who I wrote for a very dear friend who came out to me a couple of years ago. And I think I was one of the first people they came out to. And so I was very stunned by their trust and their vulnerability. And I wrote the song Boys Will Be Girls just as my response to their coming out. It's basically what I said to them in our conversation. I wrote it to the, where they could bring it with them, because I thought they might need to hear it more than one time. So that's how the song got written. But then the idea came up as I was talking about the record with Flamey before it came out, to make this video, and basically, which we made, and where basically it's me singing like I'm looking in a mirror, singing the whole song. And then like there are these hands coming in and kind of looking like they're prepping me for a photo shoot or something. And you realize it part by the first chorus that I'm being put in drag. So by the end of the video, the boy becomes a girl, like, and it's Flamey Grant, who is the one, this amazing drag queen, putting me through this transformation, and then comes in and sings on the entire last verse and chorus with me. And so once we had the idea for the video, I was like, I don't just want you in the video, I really want you on this song too. So like, it was an 11th hour thing. We sent the track to Flamey. She sang the part on it. And it's the first feature I've had on a record of mine in 10 years. I just don't do a lot of that.
I heard Jesus loved and spent his life with those who were abandoned by proud and fearful men. So if a church won't celebrate and love you, then believing lies can't save you or them, 'cause you're so beautiful.
And so we had done this video, and it had come out just after my record came out, and it had all the predictable response from all the predictable places. And mostly it was very, very positive, but obviously the Gospel Coalition, they're always good for a story and things like that. So, it had kind of done its thing, and it was great. And I mean, and it was very important to me, especially with here in my home state of Tennessee, with the way that, you know, drag performers, if not more broadly, queer people in general and trans people specifically, you know, their bodies are under attack physically. And from a legislative standpoint are also under attack. I mean, this community is under attack, and their rights are being rolled back systematically in a lot of states, but in Tennessee, it's been especially terrible lately. And so I made it as a provocation. Of course I did. Not the song, but the video. And so we had done that. And then this is a long story. I'm so sorry, but we had done that. And then, when it came to the release show, that the release house show that I did here in Nashville for my new record, I told Flamey that she just had to be here to open. I really, really wanted her here to play an opening set. And so she came to town. Jen Knapp, our mutual friend, was also just at the show. So I pulled Jen up to sing with me. Flamey pulled Jen up to sing with her, because Jen had sang on Flamey's record too. And then my friend Tiffany Arbuckle, who's in the band Plum, 20 plus years that I've known Tiffany, she was there, and she jumped up to sing with me too. So this all happened, and Flamey and Tiffany and Jen and I got in a picture together. I posted it the day after the show, just because it was such a great, it was such a great night. And I was so, and what happened was, this guy, Sean Foyt, who I don't know his music, but I know he's a big worship leader, and he kind of got real popular the last couple of years because he has a lot of photo ops with Donald Trump, and he was doing these huge worship gatherings in cities all over the country, basically big super spreader events in the hottest point of COVID. He was kind of defiantly, you know, under the banner of religious freedom, he was gathering thousands of people in a ton of cities all over the U.S. doing these big worship events with no masks and with no precautions. Brilliant. And just really super awful.
Oh boy.
And so he got very famous for that during the pandemic. He got very famous for being defiant. He was on Fox News a ton. And so he's gotten this huge platform. He saw, I don't know why he's paying attention to me, I'm kind of nobody, but he reposted my picture and my thing about my show and said, look at this, you know, this Christian artist who is partnering with a drag queen, and these are the last days indeed. It was this really kind of whatever.
Oh, good Lord.
And So he posted this all over the place, and his platform is very large. And like, you know, artists like me and like Flamey, like we make a living turning, you know, lemons into lemonade. We run lemonade stands. That's what we do. I mean, it's what we do. Nobody knows how to do this better than drag queens also, because shade is being constantly in their lives and performances. And so it's like, you know, you hope for opportunities like that. You hope your provocation that the hook sets so that you can judo it into an opportunity. And that's exactly what happens.
Such thing as bad press.
Not in this case. And so Flamey basically said, you know, like kind of, we pinged back at Sean a little bit on Twitter or whatever it's called now. And this is where it happened. He came back to Flamey and said, well, you know what? It's a good thing nobody knows about or cares about anything that you're doing or not listening to you. So that's at least so at least there's that. That's like the, you know, the comforting thought is that nobody even knows about or cares about you.
You know, you'll be fine.
Yeah. And here's the Jesus in the story. Here's the Christian in the story. If you have to really look at these stories, and try to see which character you are in it. Are you the David? Are you the Goliath? Like, and, so, you know, Sean, I'm afraid was maybe on the wrong side of that particular story. And so Flamey basically went out into her social media, which is 80,000 strong on TikTok, and said, so here's this guy, Sean Foyt, saying that I don't matter. Nobody listens. And that this doesn't, you know, that nobody cares. And what do all of you think? Is that true? Does nobody care? And as a result, this tide, this crashing wave of support for Flamey by the queer community, mainly, who sees someone like Flamey as visibility, as taking up space in even evangelical spaces where queer people belong, but are often excluded and marginalized, and basically jump behind this thing to such an extent that it sent the song that we did together, Good Day, to the absolute number one spot on the Christian singles chart, and Bible Belt Baby to the number one spot on the Christian albums chart. And the album stayed there for almost a month. And so it really backfired in a pretty major way. And it's got so much national, international press. I mean, Flamey and I did an interview with The Guardian last week.
Dude.
The story's been in Newsweek, Entertainment Weekly, People, Today, Rolling Stone, Billboard. I mean, it's been all over the national news in the last couple of weeks. It's been absolutely out of control. It has changed Flamey's career, actually.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, totally. It has propelled Flamey into this amazing position. And literally, in the same week that Flamey, that she and her husband are moving from San Diego to North Carolina, back where Flamey grew up, part of this move was going there to pursue singing, songwriting, and drag performing for the first time ever as a full-time job. And it was a very stressful move, and it was like a big gamble. Mm-hmm. But all thanks to Sean Foyt, all this wind in her sails, mm-hmm. not her back. And so it's been really beautiful. And it's a crazy story. It's
what
not
a
short story.
No, but it's beautiful. I'm so glad you shared it. Thank you. Because
don't put any of those words into Google and you'll find 100 stories about it. It's been a thing.
And I've picked up bits and pieces of it, but it was really lovely to hear you tell it. And I think it's such an illustration of this sort of counterintuitive way that like spirit works, or that transformation happens, or that like, do you know what I mean? It's like, oh yeah. And then there's this wind of this support surrounding her now. And
So, and it has meant so much. I thank you for telling the whole story, because I'd only gotten like bits and pieces and stuff, but it has meant so much to my transgender friends and family. So much. Like we were talking about being seen earlier and like hearing a song and thinking like, oh, this person gets it.
Yeah.
That's just,
same.
That's,
I mean, Flamey is such a hero. Yeah. I mean, and the saddest part, honestly, to me, as we've done interviews about this, is like the, you know, talking about the history of this, and similar, to be fair, had several number one albums in the Christian charts. So Flamey was not the first queer artist to do that, but was definitely the first drag queen. These are small numbers. Just a few people have ever cracked into this. And what I've told people is like, the sad thing is, by a long shot, these are not the first queer artists who have been at the top of the Christian charts. They're just the only ones who have been out and who have not been terrified and closeted by the structured morality around this category. The only, again, the only category in all the musical art categories that is focused on worldview and moral structure. It's like the only one. There's no other. And so it's like, that's the sad thing is like, yeah. I think of all my people I know who have been on at the top of those charts who are closeted still because they feel so terrified to be their full selves, to live a life of abundance, who they deeply and truly are. They're afraid to do that because of the professional consequences. And so it has to be in some way, you know, satisfying for some of them maybe to finally see like an out, some out queer artists at the top of these charts. And to me, it feels like, it just feels like it feels evolutionary to me. That's all it is. Every industry, there are cycles of disruption and opportunity that happen. And the Christian market is due for one. I mean, it's, there's a spark of an idea where there's opportunity and then it starts to grow and it starts to materialize and it starts to institutionalize. And then as it gets bigger and scales, little cracks appear. In those cracks are opportunity again. And in that opportunity, something organic happens and then that becomes, and then there's cracks, sparks, opportunity. So it's like, this is kind of a moment to me where the Christian music category in the next decade for sure is either going to completely fall off, is going to evolve right into an ice cube and it's going to be over, or it's going to finally, as an institution, embrace artists like Flamey and like Similar and like Maddie Zom and like Spencer LaJoy and like a lot of our friends who are in this space, or... And if it did that, then that's its version of growing a longer neck to reach the leaves in the tall tree and survive, or to get trapped into a block of ice. It's like every industry. So either it'll continue on as something meaningful with the category, or it's going to go on and die, and that'd be fine. And death and resurrection, you know, like from those ashes.
Exactly. And you could almost say the same thing about like, I mean, American Christianity, for sure. Evangelical Christianity, for sure. In general, like, you know, you talk about
pacing
that.
Right with it.
It's the same thing, right? So like we're evolving and expanding. We have these fits and starts of it too. Some people call it like a rubber band. You have the stretch and then you have that pullback. Like that's all happening. And we are like dead smack in the middle of it. And it's a really wild time to be alive in that degree, but only if you gear yourself toward being open to change and being able to like step into that evolving process. It's really
fascinating.
It's a fascinating time.
And if you're going to go and check it out online, just beware, because there just really are a lot of people. Because during moments where like the literal evolution, the bodily evolution is happening, like there's pain and like the process of morphing and changing into something that can survive and become relevant to the next 1,000 years versus being trapped in ice after the first, it's like, it's painful and it's messy. And so like, if you get in and you start to look at any of this stuff online, you're going to see every bit the resistance of all the people who are highly incentivized for things to not change. And you're going to see that. And it's it's like tread lightly into the social media side of the whole thing. We're feeling it. You literally feel the muscles and the tendons and the bones cracking and pulling and tearing. You feel it. You see it. Like when you squint your eyes at the reaction to this online, you're seeing it, and it's fascinating.
Well, and you're doing a great job creating like a third space for people to really step into the middle and being able to like walk with them through that. I think your art has done that. I think art in general has the capacity to do that. And why it feels so important for art, music, poetry at this moment of time, as we're all kind of expanding, evolving in that way, it's the role of, I think, the artist to help kind of steward that, to walk each other home in that way. I think that it's an honor to witness your music doing that, Derek, and you as just an artist and a being staying true to yourself. And I hope that folks being kind of engaging with this, listening, again, like being able to see past the clutter of social media noise and go dive deeper into the story. Yeah, it's really beautiful. Yeah. So
it's Anna said at the very beginning, it's like, if you really want to know though, like don't go read, you know, don't try to go read 100 of my tweets. I go listen to the album. I mean, that's where I have crafted and really vetted and poured over my thoughts and my feelings about every bit of this. That's where you're going to find whatever's meaningful. Like that's where you'll find, I mean, please come and hang with us on social media, but like that's if you really want to know and you really want to get down into the nuances of it, that's where you're going to, and the vulnerability that I feel safe sharing is in the context of the things that I'm writing long form. That you're not going to find that on social media. That's not a safe place for that sort of thing. But I would always steer people back to Flamey's full album, to my albums, to those longer statements.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say to anyone who's feeling like this is stretching just to hear this or think about listening to those albums, it's like those are the places where you will find the nuance of the art.
You won't find that in a tweet, and tweets are tweets.
It's going to be flammable. People are going to be, if they're scared or they're lonely, that's going to come out on Twitter. But if someone is scared and lonely, they're going to react. But if someone is scared and lonely and they take the time to process through art, you're going to see them differently. You're going to experience them differently.
Even a single song, really, you want to reserve judgment, you know. And the thing I've said about social media, and not that, I mean, this is an aside, but like, it's really what it ultimately is a Rorschach. Absolutely. All social media is a Rorschach. So it's like the thing that you find yourself, the knee-jerk response you have to a particular post or tweet or whatever it is, says way more about you than it possibly could say about what was posted. Because you're going to pick something specific out of that and say, and you know, so what I've often said, and this is language I like too, that I've played with for a while, is that maybe, it's a hypothesis. I don't, you know, it's not a law or anything yet, but maybe, especially when it comes to social media and the Rorschach of social media especially, maybe there's no such thing as objective criticism. There is only unintentional confession. Ooh. Because what I see on social media is when people, the specific thing they seem to pay attention to that seems to especially get to them about a thing that wasn't even the focus of the thing that I posted, but that's the thing that really bothered them about it, and they're outraged and they can't stop talking about it. I'm like, fascinating. Fascinating. I feel like I'm on the other side of a two-way mirror. You think you're looking at me, but you're looking at yourself. And isn't that fascinating what you're unintentionally revealing? And I'm not going to sit here and try to take advantage of that, but like, that's so much more of what I see happening on social media. So, and for that reason, since I do know that, you know, these people don't know me, obviously. They don't know me. And I have learned, for any of your listeners for whom this might be beneficial, I have learned to, and this is a very strict rule of mine, I receive no information about myself from the internet, none, because it's not a reliable source. These people don't know me. I only receive information about myself from people who are in a relationship with, deeply know and love me. Like, you know, my wife, my family, my good friends, those are the people I receive information, because they know me well enough to challenge me. They know me well enough to hold me to account. They know they're not yes people, but it's like anybody outside of that small group, I receive no information about myself from. And that's how you have to, you know, especially if you're going to engage that way, you have to be.
It feels like a healthy boundary. It feels like a nice rule that you've maybe created that, like, I think a lot of us sometimes, like, my reaction often is like, screw this. Like, I'm not even going to touch it. Like, I've walked away from social media a lot.
That's good too.
That works. When you're trying to make connections and meet people and create things and make, you know, it can be beneficial. There are some beautiful things that have come because of social media.
Sure.
But there's so much toxicity. You have, like, being able to create those sort of safeguards around it, especially when it comes to the reflection of you, your identity, the things that you create, and you put it out there to
expressing creativity and that sort of thing. Yeah.
I mean, walking into it with
awareness.
People
can react however they want. Mostly what they're saying is them saying stuff about themselves, and that's fine.
Yeah. Let it be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, it's been a treat, Derek. I wish we could keep going forever. And we're already way over, but like, we're going to have to make some fancy edits and then probably
do a double episode, two
things going on here. But we're really grateful for you, for the work that you're doing, just that you continue to do. It's really,
thank you so much.
And it's thanks a treat for spending this much time being able to chat with you about this.
Oh yeah. Thanks for letting me be in your space. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Derek and Anna, thank you so much for truly showing up for this full conversation. Really appreciate you both. So full of life. Derek, in particular, so appreciative of you taking the time to be with us. And for the rest of us, I want to offer a few prompts for conversation today, because these conversations that we do aren't intended just to be consumed and then disregarded. They're intended to draw you into further conversation with those in your life. And so if you're part of one of our table gatherings, that's one of the best ways to experience this conversation, and I'll offer prompts for that. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, I encourage you to go to theorchardcommunity.com/tables to see and learn a little bit about what we're up to with table gatherings, and perhaps join up with one or even start one in your own neighborhood. But if you're not in a community or you can't get a hold of that, then take these conversations into your own daily life and journal on them and reflect on them and use them for your own introspection and growth. So first, when have you experienced art that really sees or hears you? Maybe there's a song you heard, or a film, or a book, or maybe even a product or a business or an organization that you've discovered that you feel like, oh yeah, these people really get me. Next, Derek shared some of his story of coming under attack by that one social media post, and then how he and Flamey Grant used it to turn lemons into lemonade, so to speak, and created some real momentum for Flamey's music. What about this story kind of compels you or intrigues you? What about this story that you do you find challenging, maybe? What about this story really resonates you, maybe in your own place of creativity or resistance to your creativity? And then as we wrapped up our conversation, we ended up talking a little bit about social media and our identities and how they all get wrapped up, and also how potentially toxic social media can be if we're not careful with it. What are some boundaries or parameters that could help you engage with social media in a healthy way? Maybe there are practices that you've learned to keep a healthy relationship with social media that you could share with the rest of us. We're going to go ahead and put links in the show notes this week for you to watch Derek's Boys Will Be Girls video, and also listen to his new record, The Jesus Hypothesis, both of which I strongly encourage you to dive deep into. His work is just deeply meaningful. Friends, it's so good to be with you today. Thank you for joining us. Before we conclude, I wanted to share a couple of items briefly. First, if you live in the Aurora, Chicago, Illinois area, we would love to have you put a date on your calendar, September 10th. September 10th at 11 a.m., we will be hosting our second Sunday gathering at Society 57 downtown Aurora. And this one's going to be a little bit different to kick the fall off. Some of you may or may not be aware of this, but I recently put out a record called Mantra Songs for Starting Over. And I've been putting together a series of these guided concert experiences as this participatory way of sharing these songs with groups of people. And I'll be out in Aurora that day sharing that very guided concert with you as our liturgy together. So we're also going to be sharing some exciting vision about the future of table gatherings, and it would be a great day for you to invite someone to get a taste of what The Orchard is all about. So again, if you're in the Aurora area, September 10th from 11 to 12:30 p.m. at Society 57, hold space for that. Be on the lookout. Perhaps there's a person in your life or your circle of connection that could use a community like The Orchard right now in their lives. So we invite you to invite them and be part of this thing with us. Cool? Great. And speaking of our community, I wanted to say thank you to those of you who have been consistently supporting us financially with giving. What financial support does for us is it literally like puts wheels on the car of The Orchard. Or maybe a better analogy is putting like gas in the car. I don't know, whatever. I'm not a mechanic. but what I do know is that our community is doing some really meaningful work in the way that our culture really needs right now. And we are dependent on people like yourself to keep it going and keep it moving forward and growing and expanding. So if you feel compelled, if you've been touched by the vision and have a vision for The Orchard reaching people, we invite you to be part of financially supporting this work at any level. Even the smallest amount is really felt. Now, there's three ways that you can do that. One is our website, theorchardcommunity.com/give. The other is using our app to set up recurring giving. You can search the Orchard app or the Orchard Aurora app in the App Store, either platform. Or you can mail a check to P.O. Box 7688 Aurora, Illinois, 60507. Thank you so much for everything that you do, your participation, your connection, your giving. All of it is meaningful to us. Today, I want to leave you with this blessing on your week and on your life. Would you just hold space and just receive this blessing today? May the light of divine creativity illuminate your path, guiding you to the sacred spaces within where your truest self resides. May the warmth of community envelop you, affirming your worth, your voice, your place in this intricate tapestry of existence. And as we gather around this table of grace, may your heart be nourished by divine love, empowering you to nourish others in return. In this circle, may you find hope. Be well, my friends. We'll see you next week.
Maybe some things aren't meant